Hey, everybody. It's Tuesday.
Yeah, we went out last night, man. We're fucking bushed.
Yeah. Like I'm pretty tired. Yeah. Well, you know, your snoring ass woke me up again.
See, she's going really about the snoring stuff again, man. I was not snoring. I deny.
Yes.
I fucking deny. It was, I told her, she goes, she woke up this morning, you snored all night. And I went, nah, it was your
Not all night. You snored at, like, you woke me up at like 6:30 in the morning. Okay. Like, really loud.
You were snoring and I was like, nah, it was your imagination. She goes, oh, it's my imagination.
Yeah, like, he's gaslighting me. Yeah, it's like, saying that he's not. I was actually thinking while I was laying there annoyed, like trying to go back to sleep, I was like, maybe I should record this.
All you gotta do is roll me over. And I stopped snoring.
I was like, shut up! Yeah, I was like freaking out.
That's not how you handle it. Just roll me over.
Well, because, I mean, the night before, I think I only got 4 or 5 hours of sleep. And then I was like, then last night, I probably only got like 3 hours of sleep. And I'm like, God damn it, fucking seriously. Like, waking me up at fucking 6 o'clock in the morning.
We need to put headphones on you.
I'm just gonna buy some earplugs.
No, that won't keep it out. What you do is we'll get you some earbuds and stream like the sounds of rain or music or something that'll keep it chilled out, and then you wouldn't hear it.
Yeah, I need like noise canceling headphones.
I have to be like listening to something really to fall asleep.
I don't.
There's gotta be noise.
I have to have silence, but I don't.
I'm quite the opposite.
I don't ever get that.
Silence actually makes me more alert. Noise makes me know it's safe. I think that's because. Just growing up in the army and stuff.
Yeah.
Growing up in military academies and shit.
Like Oscar Perez.
Hearing noises is great. You know, fucking bunch of noise and everybody talking. That, oh, it's safe. If it's quiet, it's dangerous. Because you're sneaking around.
Yeah, I get that. But it's like, I'm not. And I'm not like a real light sleeper, but it's, you know, I don't like noise when I'm sleeping. Yeah. I don't like noise and I don't like light. I can't sleep in the daytime. Yeah. Like, you can take a nap in the daytime. I can't. It's too
Oh, man, I can take a nap on a fucking flight line with a bunch of jet engines. I fucking love it.
Yeah.
I love the sound of jet engines.
I wish I could do that, but I can't. I can't.
Be up in a transport plane or in a fucking chopper, fucking UH-1, Huey, fucking with the whoop-whoop and all that, or the UH-60. They sound very similar. And just the sound of the damn jet turbines in those fucking choppers just put me right to sleep. Just fucking, I love it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't know what it is, man.
Well, like I said, I'm not. I wish I could do that, but I can't.
It's great.
Yeah. Oscar Perez just called it America's favorite goth couple.
Yeah.
That's us.
Man, they were fucking calling us down the middle of the street last night, taking photographs of me. The fucking guy that owned the bar across the street. He wanted me to get everybody to go to his club. So you want?
We
me
know
to
that guy though. We know that guy.
Yeah, he said he knew me. I didn't know. I didn't recognize the guy.
Yeah, we used to talk to him all the time.
Where did we talk to him?
We might have met him at Ibar.
At Ibar?
Okay. I think so, yeah. Which isn't called Ibar anymore.
So he wants me to move the crowd from my friend's bar to his bar.
No, he was just saying if you wanted to have a goth night or a new wave night over
there.
That's
the same thing, though.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Same thing. Okay.
But we do know that.
And I'm just looking at him like, oh, dude. All right.
Yeah. So I'm a little bit sleepy. But, you know. We're talking about some Stephen King adaptation action.
Yeah.
Graveyard Shift.
Yeah, with fucking fake fucking main actors.
Now, I'm going to... okay. So, somebody already mentioned Stephen Mocht, I guess is how you pronounce his last name. He's actually from New York. Now, he's like one of the best things about this, because he's like so over the top, and he does like that main accent, and it's just like fucking hilarious.
That's the boss, right?
Yeah, yeah. Warwick. And so I was watching like some other... because I was curious... I know that, like, if you've seen, like, Pet Sematary and stuff, like, the original Pet Sematary, you know, Fred Gwynn's character who has that really strong, like, main accent. So I was like, well, how accurate is that? But from what I could determine, the actor that played Warwick in this movie, he did actually have a vocal coach who was from that part of Maine, because they did shoot this in Maine, actually. Yeah. And he said that's pretty much exactly what that dude sounded like.
Okay.
So it was, like, apparently... a pretty accurate.
That
his accent was so awesome in this, and he was like so over the top that I don't know whose executive decision this was, but they took a bunch of his lines from the movie and essentially made it into like a rap song that plays over the end credits. Come on.
Yeah.
And like, I think they, because this recently came, I think Scream Factory just did a Blu-ray of this not too long ago, and there's like an interview with that actor. And there, and he's like, he was like, didn't know they were going to do that. And he just like thought that was like super
funny.
A lot of these Stephen King movies
were not that good. Some of them have aged kind of well, though. You know what I mean? This one is actually one of the better ones, but it's not real serious. It's kind of horror comedy, like, you know.
It's super cheesy.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be. But it's shot real well. It's real competent. It's got fun dialogue in it, and acting and crazy shit.
It's
monsters.
Just, it's totally over the top. It's totally over the top.
My favorite character in it was the guy who plays the exterminator.
Yeah, Brad Dourif.
Yeah, Brad Dourif was...
he's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Voice of Chucky. And he was in Exorcist 3.
Well, really, you know, he got burned into my mind because he played the Mentat Piter.
Yeah, that's right.
From fucking
He was in
Dune
as well. Yeah.
And when the new Dune movie comes out, I want to see who fucking Piter is played by. Yeah, because...
Who doesn't love Brad Dourif? He's just like a great fucking character actor. Yeah. And like, yeah, him and Warwick are like easily the best characters in this.
Yeah.
I mean, the scene where Brad Dourif's character, he just plays an exterminator.
Yeah,
I think
he was really good in Exorcist 3 too, wasn't it?
Yeah, just then. Yeah. But so the scene where he's talking about, because he's like a Vietnam veteran, and he was like talking about being in Vietnam and what the VC like did to the American servicemen, like staking them to the ground and then like making a little cut and then like having the rat like crawl inside them and shit. And it's like, that's a great fucking scene. So I was like, I was watching some like behind the scenes stuff of this because, okay, I kind of feel like let's have a 3-tier system of Stephen King adaptations. Yeah. So like on the top tier, obviously, you got your, you know, Shinings, your Miseries, you know, things like that. And then in the middle tier, you kind of got stuff like, I'm trying to think of like maybe a middle tier. What, maybe like Pet Sematary, you know, something like that. And then you got like super, super shitty ones. I kind of feel like this falls sort of in the middle, but maybe on the end towards shitty, but it's also kind of like fun. I had not,
like an Evil Dead.
I had not seen this in a long time. And for whatever reason, I thought when I was rewatching it, I was like, oh, this is like better than I remembered. I think that I was remembering Toby Hooper's The Mangler, which was the one with Robert Englund in it, right?
Yeah.
Because they're very similar stories. I mean, even the short stories it's based on, they're both in the book Night Shift. You know, the stories came out originally like in the early 70s, but then like Night Shift came out in 1978. And they're both, I mean, The Mangler was kind of based on Stephen King's own experience when he was a college kid working in an industrial laundry and thinking, what if this machine got possessed by a demon and like came to life and started eating people? And this one is set in like a textile mill. And he said that he knew a guy that worked in a textile mill and was talking, sorry, I was talking about how full of rats it was. And that's what gave him the idea for this movie. Or for this story, rather. Now, the short story is actually really, really short. So you can see that when they adapted this to film, they really, really had to add, like, a bunch of shit. Like, a bunch of, like, character development and stuff. Because it's essentially just, like, a monster movie, right?
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, and like I said, in the story, you know, this kind of follows the story, but they added, like, a bunch of extraneous stuff, like, between the characters and everything. So what you have is this dude named, the first scene, do you know when this first came out? Like, I don't think it did.
What year was this?
1990.
Okay.
1990.
It felt very late 80s.
Well, it was late 80s.
1990 was very 80s. People
it was,
it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I saw, too, and now this kind of gives me, like, a little bit more admiration for this movie because it could have, like, really, really been shitty because I think they made this movie, like, super fast. I mean, I think that the movie was greenlit because this was Paramount. This was greenlit, like, in April of 1990, and they said, we'll have it out by Halloween.
Yeah.
And it was, like, so it came out, like, a few days before Halloween of 1990. And for that, like, for it being that quick, it's actually, like, not bad.
I liked it, although I didn't see it when it came out. Had I seen this when it came out in 1990, I probably would have laughed it off. But the movie's aged very well. They don't really make movies like this anymore. If you were to see a movie like this come out right now, it would stand out. You'd like it. But it would definitely wouldn't be from a big studio. It would be an underground studio. It has a tone. To me, I was thinking it was kind of like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, or Evil Dead 2, or, you know, it was just like, it was that same, they were trying to give that same visual tone as a lot of the horror movies of the time that kind of had over the top gore and kind of comedy mixed into it. They were trying to lighten this gore with a little bit of humor, probably to get it through censorship.
Although it didn't work, because when this movie originally came out, it was rated X because of all the gore.
Was it? Okay.
Even though it's not that gory, like a lot of the deaths are kind of like you don't really see them happen. You just kind of see the aftermath, and it's yucky and squishy. But it's not. I don't think it's like super super gory.
This is a Dorff movie. I think he carries it really.
I wish he'd been in it more. Right. To be honest,
he's the guy that really stood out the most. There's something about Dorff. The average person doesn't really know that dude's name. I didn't know that guy's name. But every time you see him in a movie, he stands out. You remember him. You remember his look. He's a very good actor. He can really pull off a fucking psychotic nut.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he he can act crazy, and you can buy it in any movie that he's in. He can fit to the tone of that movie. Like Dune had a kind of a serious sci-fi tone. He fit to that. Then he was in this other movie that fucking was like a crazy ass spinoff of fucking Terminator with a big killer robot that was like a dinosaur with fucking teeth. Remember that? It was very limited. He was in that.
Oh yeah.
What was the name of that fucking movie? It was kind of like a cross between Terminator and a dinosaur and Alien, and it's just.
It wasn't Carnosaur, was it?
It was some that Roger Corman one. It was a bizarre low budget movie that is now a classic, and it had like a lot of good shit in it.
Yeah.
And he carries he's like one of the main dudes through that whole movie. He's just a psycho. Somebody in the comments section might be able to drop it in there. The movie was very blue. It had like everything was blue filtered.
Yeah.
The way I remember it. And a lot of darkness and a lot of blue, and it had a lot of damn
killer robots. This is the bluest movie I've ever seen.
It was good, yeah. Kind of like from the time around Matrix, I think is when it came out. Around that time. But
somebody brought up Spontaneous Combustion too, which is another one. Yeah. We should actually review that one because I remember really liking that movie. Brad Dorff was in that as well.
And then Dorff also fucking knocks it out of the park in Exorcist 3. He did a fucking scene where he's in a damn fucking jail cell. He's fucking all these damn demonic souls fucking speaking through him, and he's just fucking, it's like an Academy Award winning performance, man. Fucking,
I think we was, because we did a review of that, and I was kind of like, I just wish that, like, Brad Dorff would have got some kind of award for that shit, because that was like such a good movie.
And Dorff,
he
is
was
like
fucking great in
he's
it.
He's like this fucking Hollywood sleeper. The average person doesn't know his name, but they recognize him, and he stands out in every fucking movie. He should have had a much bigger fan following than he did in his day. He's probably got a pretty good fan following in retrospect. But in his day, he wasn't that famous.
Yeah. I mean, in horror circles, he was. Probably mostly because of the Child's Play movies. Because, like I said, he was Charles Lee Ray, right? Yeah. He was the voice of Chucky. You know, he was the serial killer that transferred
his soul. But pre-internet, people didn't know that dude's name. Only a fucking hardcore horror fans would know that dude's name.
Louis also brought up that he was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I had totally... I had totally forgotten about that. So it's like I feel like he's he was. I feel like he's never like the star of the movie.
No, he's like a supporting actor.
He's always like a supporting actor, but it's like like you said, anytime he's in a movie, he's always like the best thing in it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
And he was like one of the best things out of the fucking original Dune movie.
Yeah. Because there's just something, I don't know, there's just like something.
Mentat Piter. He was a human computer. They were like a Golas that were brought back to life. They were like the dead brought back to life, mind wiped and given all these fucking drugs that allowed them to learn things, and they were kind of like living human computers that you could buy as a slave because they were the undead. That's in the Dune world, they were like that.
Yeah.
The Mentats, because it was like against their laws to have computers because they took over in a prior era. It's a fucking great movie. I can't wait for that shit to come out. And Piter was a fucking very rare and expensive Mentat because he was fucking evil. And a Mentat was not supposed to be evil. He was very evil.
And he was you're not supposed to be.
Yeah,
evil.
And he was like into the pleasures of the flesh and shit. He had been corrupted, you know? And they were conditioned to where they weren't supposed to be corrupted. But the Harkonnens had him. Baron Vladimir Harkonnen had one, and he was like an exotic, evil computer, living computer. Badass idea.
Somebody brought up that Thinner was also a really good underrated Stephen King movie. I just watched that again, like, not too long ago, and that was also better than I remembered. Mm. This one was better than I remembered. I have to watch The Mangler again, because, like I said, these two are kind of similar, and I think they maybe came out, like, within a few years of each other. So I was thinking, when I watched this movie, I was confusing some scenes with The Mangler. But yeah, so what happens in this one, and you know what's cool about this? Not only, obviously, they actually, I think there was like a fairly large studio that was talking about remaking this, like up until 2014, I think they were throwing around the idea of remaking it. But I don't think that would have been so cool, because it would have just been all CGI rats. And I don't think that that would have been too awesome, because they actually use real rats for this. And, and also where they shot it, like I said, they shot it in Maine. And they shot it in a real old textile mill. So some of the stuff, like, I think like the last scene with like the big rat bat monsters thing, like lair with all the bones and stuff in it, I think some of that was a matte painting, if I'm remembering correctly. But all of the shit you see like in the mill, that's all a real textile mill. Like, it had been there since 1821 or something like that. I don't think it was open anymore. But it really gives the movie this really grimy, yucky, because like everything is like dirty and filthy and wet. And just, it just feels like this nastiness. And then there's all these like fucking little rats like looking at him and stuff. But I have to say, like, the opening scene with like the guy that's working the cotton picker machine, and you know, there's the little rats like come up to watch him and stuff, like, hey man, what you doing? You know, and it's like sitting on the bags and everything. And he's like given this lecture, like, you know, have you done your homework today or something like that? And then he's like, you didn't. That means that. So he picks up a rat and he throws it like into the picker machine. At that point, I was like, okay, I'm sorry, I'm team rat. Yeah. I kind of wanted the rats to kill everybody. They did kill a lot of people. But the thing about it, though, I think that in the original short story, which has been a while since I read it, I think in the original short story, a lot of the shit does happen. Like, Warwick is a character who's, you know, he's like the foreman and he's like this crazy bastard or whatever. And, you know, this one guy comes there, gets a job, and it's, you know, 4th of July weekend. They're like, we need to clean out this basement, like, so we can put some offices down there or whatever. And no one's been down there for ages. And it's like just, it's rat infested. So that happens. And then they find a sub basement. And then there's like a big, huge fucking rat down there. But for whatever reason in the movie, they made it like a big rat-bat hybrid.
Yeah, it did make sense.
Which didn't really make sense, but honestly, I thought the monster was like really good. I thought it was really well done. Like, the practical effect was really well done.
That's probably why they did it. They were like, well, it's not just going to be just a big rat. That's not going to be impressive. It's got to be a rat-like monster.
It's got to have big bat wings
and shit.
That's, because it can like enfold people, which I thought that was kind of cool. Even though if you're thinking about it, it doesn't really make any sense that there would be like this. Because where is this creature going to fly to?
Yeah. I mean, it would be flying around.
Yeah. Because it like lives underground. Thank you, Trey. Yeah, the poster for this movie reminded me of the one from My Bloody Valentine. I thought that too. And it was just kind of like, it's weird because the poster doesn't really, if you just saw the poster back in 1990 and you hadn't read the short story and you just see this like this skeleton or the skull with like a hard hat on, and it's called Graveyard Shift. So you're assuming it's going to be like workers at night and stuff, which it is, but
maybe zombies or something.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it gives any impression that it's about that it's a monster movie or that it's about like rats killing people, unless you'd read the story.
Should have been just Brad Dourif on the cover.
Yeah, with his like
poster. Fucking,
with his tell your friends, fucker. Shit. Yeah, yeah. Like spraying it with the fucking water and stuff. But see, the people were like, they were so mean to the rats in the movie that I was kind of like, because the rats were kind of cute, you know? Like, sitting up there, like, looking at everybody, like, hey, man, we just want to, like, live. And, like, just, like, throwing them into the picker machine. And I was just kind of like, man, the rats should kill every one of you fuckers. Which they actually do end up doing.
Actually, had I seen this in 1990, like I said, I think I may have said this already, I probably wouldn't have fucking really liked it all that much. But it's aged very well. You watch it now, and it's, in retrospect, it's good. It's good. Like, if you were to see a brand new movie like this, if you were to see it come out right now, you'd like it.
Yeah.
It'd be fun.
I mean, like I said, I don't know. I mean, I guess it was supposed to be like comedic as well, because it does have like that kind of tone to it. But I think it helps because the cheesiness factor is very high because everyone's just kind of, because Brad Dourif is like over the top, but in a, like the most awesome way possible. Stephen Mock's character is just completely over the top with that fucking crazy ass Maine accent.
Yeah.
And he's just like so good in it. And he's just like so evil, like for no reason whatsoever. It's just like, he's, you know, it's like they go down to the basement and he just starts like fucking killing people and leaving them behind and shit like that. He's like, oh, well, whatever.
The production quality was pretty good.
It was.
And it's... the colors, the color filters and stuff that they used on it were to try to give it kind of candy colored. So that there, it's trying to be in the movie motif of the 90s and the 80s. This is, it's trying to portray itself basically as a comic book movie. It's not supposed to be real. A lot of stuff happens that is not realism.
Yeah.
It's just, you're just supposed to watch it and enjoy it like it's a comic book movie.
And it's
like
just
something out of Tales from the Crypt or...
Yeah, or, and it's just kind of like... I mean, like I said, a lot of the, you know, the characters are over the top, which is great, but there's also kind of like this whole, like, funny bullying storyline type of thing. Like, when the guy, like, John Hall, that is the character's name. He's played by, what's the guy's name? David Andrews, yeah. So when he comes there and gets a job at the mill, like, all of the dudes at the mill are just, like, picking up, like, it's like third grade shit, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like, hey, have you did rent? Hey, you know what I mean? It's just like, I don't really know why. But that, I kind of feel like that happens a lot in Stephen King stories, where it's just, like, these assholes in town that are just, like, picking on people for no reason whatsoever.
Trey's asking how long it was in theaters.
Probably not very long. I think that it only cost, I think it cost $10 million to make, and maybe only made like $12 million back.
Yeah.
So it kind of came and went.
In this era, there were a lot of good movies making a lot of money in theaters.
It was number one the weekend it came out, because that was Halloween weekend.
And that
would have
been good enough.
But then after that, it just kind of like trailed off.
That would have been good enough if it was number one for that weekend. And they would have replaced it with another movie that was making money, because you have to remember, 1990 was the fucking era of damn blockbuster. So when this thing ended up in on VHS, it made a lot of money on VHS, just kids renting it.
Yeah, and so, it's funny because I think that Stephen King, he came to the set one day when they were shooting it, and I think that he either watched like some of the dailies or something like that, and I think he said to the director, this'll do great on video.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if, like, I guess it sounded like he, like, throwing shade, maybe, because it's like, this is gonna do well in the theaters, but
it's not what he meant.
But maybe that's not what he meant.
Because that was a futuristic... that was the futuristic sales strategy in 1990. If you went direct to video, you could still make a lot of money, all right? And if the production quality was low, you'd make a lot of profit. That was a decent way of doing it. But that movie would not have clout. If it had a theatrical release and then went to VHS, even better, because it had street cred of being, of having a theatrical release.
Yeah.
That it was a real movie. But a lot of those movies, and this is probably one of them, a lot of those horror movies were made to do just exactly that. Be at a theater for a week or so. But the idea was to get it out on VHS and fucking make money on it. Now, they had all kinds of contractual shit. Like, a lot of times they had to wait 6 months before it could go. But that was all part of the plan.
Yeah. Mr. Roboto says, was the book better, Tom and Jenny? It's always better. Wasn't a book. It was actually a really short story.
I didn't read it.
Yeah. It's in Night Shift, which came out in 1978, which I think has, like, some of his best short stories ever. But yeah, it's in there. The story is way better, but you can tell, like, the movie, like, expanded out on it. But what I was going to say was that the reason that this came out that week, and like I said, the reason they put it into production so quickly, was because late 80s, early 90s, that was like a big, they were adapting like Stephen King out the fucking ass, man. Like every time, like whatever Stephen King wrote, they're like, yeah, we need an adaptation of that, like toot sweet. So when somebody comes to them with a script, hey, I've adapted Graveyard Shift, like the Stephen King, they're like, okay, do it. Have it out by Halloween because we want a Stephen King adaptation out. So it was almost kind of like, because the dude that wrote the screenplay for this is what I heard, John Esposito, who actually wasn't really well known then. He's since gone on, like, he's even like written some episodes of the new Creepshow and shit like that. So he's gone on to do like a lot more horror shit. But he just wrote an adaptation of it. Like, no one asked him to or anything like that. He just wrote it. And it just happened that he knew somebody that Because I think the guy that directed this, Ralph S. Singleton, who, I don't know if this was his first movie, but he mostly worked in TV. Like, he did, like, Cagney and Lacey and shit like that. And so he knew somebody at Paramount and was like, hey, you want a Stephen King adaptation? This kid wrote one, you know, that, like, unauthorized. And so then they were like, okay, we'll put it into production. So, like I said, Stephen King seemed excited about it at first, but then when he saw it, he didn't like it. But I guess he didn't hate it enough to, like, take his name off it, because every single place I see this now is Stephen King's Graveyard Shift. Mm. So it wasn't like a Lawnmower Man situation where he sued to have his name taken off. And honestly, rightfully so, because that movie has absolutely nothing fucking to do with the short story that it's based on. So... I can see why he did that. This is a fairly, you know, this is a decent adaptation, I think. I mean, it's not one of the worst ones. I kind of wanted to do...
Not Christine either.
Yeah, but like I said, it's not like top tier. It's not like Dead Zone or anything like that. You know, Christine. Like some of the fucking brilliant ones.
Right.
Yeah, I'd even put...
Firestarter was damn good too.
Honestly, it's like, I know a lot of people, and we've kind of gone into this a little bit too, but this is something that I can probably talk about all day, is that... You know, I know a lot of people say it's like so many shitty adaptations of Stephen King's stuff, but there's not, I mean, there's really a lot of good ones too.
That a lot of people forget.
It's just that they made so many that.
I actually liked Dark Half, and a lot of people didn't like that, but I liked
Dark Half. I did as well. Yeah, I liked Dark Half.
Cool. Yeah, the fucking bad guy come out of the fucking novels. He was from what, Jasper County or Jones County, Mississippi? And I was going, okay. He had his old fucking. Highly toned son of a bitch on the back of his fucking car.
High toned son of a bitch, that's right, yeah.
His car was highly toned son of a bitch, yeah. Fucking,
I also liked the Dark
Half. He was a fucking killer fucking, rockabilly redneck. Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, I think John Turturro played him. I think he was like, and I love John Turturro.
Yeah.
Oscar Perez said Christine was great. I feel like when people bring up awesome Stephen King adaptations, hardly anybody brings up Christine, and Christine is so good.
And then so was the made-for-TV Salem's Lot from back in the 70s.
Yeah, which we did a review of that too. Yeah, that was fucking great. It's
a fucking really good movie.
That was Toby Hooper who directed that. Yeah. Best King adaptation. I don't know.
The only thing wrong with the fucking TV Salem's Lot.
The Shining or Misery.
One thing wrong with the TV Salem's Lot is that Mr. Barlow didn't speak. And in the movie, he spoke.
You mean in the book he spoke?
In the book, yeah. That's what I'm saying. In the book he spoke, and in the made-for-TV movie
he didn't speak. I kind of preferred that he didn't talk. I thought he was scarier.
There's a real good scene in the book.
Yeah, I know.
Where Mr. Barlow fucking challenges that priest to a duel over the child. Remember about and a battle of faith, and the priest lost. Fucking Mr. Barlow killed his ass.
Killed his ass and the rest of him too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody brought up Secret Window. I've actually wanted to do Secret Window recently because I think that is on. Where the fuck did I see that? Now this Stephen King's Graveyard Shift is on Hulu, and I think Hulu also has Sleepwalkers, which. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember that being one of the really shitty Stephen King adaptations, but I could be misremembering. Because, like I said, that was the one with all the cats, right? I kind of feel like that was the one with all the cats. But I'm trying to, like, think of some really shitty ones. I mean, obviously, everybody brings up, like, shitty Stephen King adaptations, like fucking, what do you call it? The one that was based on trucks. Maximum Overdrive. And that is a shitty movie, but it's so shitty that it goes all the way around and becomes awesome again. Just because it's like so shitty.
I haven't seen it.
So you would probably love it.
Yeah.
You would love Maximum Overdrive. It's just like, it's one of those.
Nah, worst one was Lawnmower Man.
That's what I mean. Yeah, and honestly, like I said, that's.
Lawnmower Man, and
I would call that an adaptation in name only because that had fuck all to do with the short story.
It just sucked.
Oh, I want to say Stand By Me was a really good one, too. That was fucking brilliant. That was based on a novella called The Body. I mean, like I'm saying, it seems like there's been a lot of good ones.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, the best one, we didn't even mention the best one, was The Shining.
I did. I said The Shining Misery or Carrie. See, there's a bunch of good ones. The Dead Zone.
Carrie was really good.
God damn.
So there are a lot of good ones.
There are a lot of good ones.
Langoliers wasn't too good from what I remember.
Okay, I'm going to put that one. That one's in kind of the shitty tier.
That was bad.
Which, that was like a really good story, and that was a shame because they kind of whiffed that.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen all the Stephen King adaptations because, let's be fair, there are like so many. But
people always forget Firestarter, man. And Firestarter was fucking great. It was up there with like Dead Zone.
I really liked Firestarter as well. And honestly, like, Mike Flanagan has made some good shit. He made like fucking Gerald's Game, and did he make 1922 or was that somebody else? And that, I kind of feel like a lot of Stephen King's stuff, I think that his more psychological horror works better in a film than his more horror.
Silver Bullet. Yeah.
Now Silver Bullet.
It wasn't that bad. That was pretty
delightful.
That's pretty good.
That had Gary Busey at his Gary Busey.
He was Buseying the fuck out of that movie.
It was so fucking funny.
Busey the fuck out of that damn movie. That was Silver Bullet was good because it was a horror movie and it was kind of like a similar tone to like Gremlins, where it's kids, an uncle, and a monster. You know, actually, no, it was probably more closer to like Fright Night. When you say more like Fright Night.
Not as good as Fright Night.
Not as good, but I mean, it was kind of like Fright Night.
Very few movies are as good as Fright Night, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have a soft spot for Silver Bullet.
Not bad.
Yeah. That one's cheesy too, but it's cheesy in a fun way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, like, and lately, like I said, they've made some good Stephen King adaptations, I feel like.
Terrible. They did a terrible job of fucking The Dark Tower. Man, poor Idris Elba.
That needs a series. Because, how are they going to cram all of that?
It has to be a series. It's got to be fucking really long and detailed. It has to be pretty much verbatim by the book.
Yeah, I mean, it just has to, because that's like a whole, like, fucking universe,
and the
man.
Lead man has to be as described in the fucking book. In the book, he is described as Clint Eastwood. He's Clint Eastwood. Yeah. He's like a parallel universe version of fucking Clint Eastwood. So you have to have a tall, skinny, fucking white guy with a long coat and it. You know, fucking, if you could get Eastwood to do it, it'd be great. He's far too old. But if you could have got...
Yeah, he's fucking starting to look like a mummy these days.
But if you were to get Eastwood in his 50s or his 60s even, he could have done it.
That might have been kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I have to say, I never really got into Stephen King's more fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
I liked Eyes of the Dragon, which was kind of like a fairy tale-ish kind of thing. But I read like the first of the Dark Tower series, and then I read... The Talisman.
Yeah, that was a great one.
And
it was him and Peter Straub.
Yeah, well, no.
Or wasn't it Peter
Straub?
Yeah,
it was him and Peter Straub.
They traded off.
And then they wrote another chapters. One, too, called The Black House, but I didn't read that one, which was like a sequel, I guess.
Talisman was great.
I liked him, but it's like, it wasn't my favorite genre of his. Honestly, my favorite stuff of Stephen King's, I like his like early horror shit, you know what I mean? Like all of his early books pretty much were good. I love his short stories. But I feel like he's at his best when he does psychological horror.
Santa just showed up. She's apologizing. She wasn't able to change her name. It's okay.
That's okay.
She was busy up in Germany eating all that damn peanut butter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Making peanut buttered pie.
Yeah. Peanut butter pie.
Saunders, had that a while.
Yeah. Saunders said The Green Mile was good. Yeah, The Green Mile was actually good. So like I said, they have made like a lot of really good ones. They have made a lot of really good ones. You know, and like I said, I feel like Dolores Claiborne was great. You know, that was a great book too. I remember, I've been wanting to rewatch this. I remember they made like a TV miniseries of Rose Red. Because I remember really liking that book. Now, did he write the book first, or did they make the TV series, like, and then he wrote the novelization from the... I can't remember how that went. Because I remember it was, like, a big event, like, when it came out of TV. That was, like, in the early 2000s, I want to say. And I remember that being pretty good.
Shawshank Redemption. That's up there, too.
Yeah, Shawshank Redemption. Again. Yeah. But it's just, like, I kind of feel like, other than his early shit, like, you know, Christine and, you know, The Shining, which is, like, a ghost story and stuff, I kind of feel like his better stuff and the stuff that makes better adaptations is stuff that's just more psychological like that.
The best one, just best one everybody knows is The Shining, okay? Kubrick, that's it.
Yeah.
All right. But actually, for me, the most watchable, the one where you just watch it and you like it and it's just fun to watch, is Christine. I think that's the most watchable one.
Yeah, that's John Carpenter, man.
John Carpenter.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, I feel like that's one a lot of people don't bring up when they're talking about the good Stephen King adaptations.
And maybe right underneath that would have been Carrie.
Yeah.
Real close. real close.
Yeah, like I mean, there's so many good ones. Like I said, yeah. Fucking Misery was great. Yeah. Like fucking God, so many. The Dead Zone is great.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, yeah, Dead Zone.
Salem's Lot was great.
And then yeah, Salem's Lot. Yeah, but man, I still just kind of lean towards.
And Running Man, that's it.
Running
that's,
Man. Yep, yeah.
Running Man with Stephen King. That was Stephen King adaptation also.
I'm just kind of. I forgot that Running Man was Stephen King.
That bitch wrote everything.
Yeah.
He wrote everything.
That was kind of fucking weird.
How does
though.
He have all this
the problem
like
with Running
that?
Man? That's the Arnold Schwarzenegger Running Man, right?
Yeah.
That's what I forgot. Yeah, yeah. That was an adaptation.
Yeah.
Very loose.
A loose adaptation.
Because the real original one was kind of more kind of like fucking the ones with. What's the one where the girls fucking. The girl, what was her name, Songbird, or fucking, what the shit, where they're holding, like, gladiatorial games between the cities and shit.
Oh.
There was a whole bunch series of them.
The Hunger Games.
The Hunger Games. It was kind of more like Hunger Games. It was really what the original story was about. Hunger Games, that's right.
I remember the story being, like, pretty serious. Yeah. Like, the novella.
Yeah. But the problem, look, now I'm going to start getting into fucking Arnie, all right? That was a decent Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, but it was really missing something. There was no real action in it. An action movie without any action. That's a weird concept. If you go back and watch The Running Man, you never really see very much combat.
Yeah.
People get killed and you're not really sure how they got killed. You see Sub-Zero
get
strangled.
He got edited to death.
Yeah, they edited the shit out. They edited pretty much all of the violence out of it. It was still kind of a good story, but when you watch it, it's not a lot. There's no real action in the fucking movie. They edited all the violence out.
I still like that movie, but...
They needed to have a fucking NC-17 version of that. But I bet you maybe they never even shot it.
They might not have.
It could be that they never shot any of the real action movies. It promised a lot. Like, oh man, this is a gladiatorial fucking battle to the death. But I think, if I remember correctly, Arnold did not want to fucking come across as a villain. And in a certain way, that character kind of was a villain in a way. Or you thought he was for half the movie. And then it turns out he's not. And so I kind of think Arnie didn't want to be on screen murdering anybody.
That might have been what it was.
Yeah.
Mr. Roboto says, running is action, Tom. Jumping is action.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means now this is an action show.
But you guys are old enough to remember the fucking context of the time. The movie that changed everything. The movie that even changed video games was fucking Commando. All right? And Commando was basically a video game. Big fucking muscular dude running from one fight and killing all kinds of dudes with all kinds of guns to the next one, and there's even boss fights in it and everything, and then it ends with a fucking boss fight. And he's leveling up as he's going, getting different weapons and shit. It's like watching a video, and it has a fucking great soundtrack. It's like you're listening to this. And a lot of video games after that movie were built upon the edit of fucking Commando. All right. So Commando set the bar high. But I think even fucking Arnie tried to back off of that because he wasn't all that famous when he made that movie. You know, he started to want to be a hero all the fucking time.
And yeah. Even though he's a great bad guy.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of like Oscar brought up the Terminator. He's fucking great in that.
And he knew that.
Yeah.
He knew that.
But he didn't want to be.
He didn't want to be a bad guy.
But like I said, I get it, because if you're an actor, you want a long career. If you get typecast as villains,
bad guy, that's it.
Then
you're never a headliner,
right? It's kind of like, you know, you're the one that always gets your ass kicked at the end.
In the end, you always
get
killed and fucking and then your value starts going down and down in Hollywood. You know, well, you know, he's just the guy that we have. We show up, we kill him. Yeah, they don't want that. You know? So he was correct about some of that shit, but some of that shit for artistic purposes should not have involved him being 100% good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, I wanted to say, too, that other good Stephen King adaptations would be, I just thought of some anthologies, Cat's Eye and Creepshow.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Because Creepshow, even though, I mean, that's what based on his stories, and Cat's Eye had three of his short stories adapted, and that was actually pretty decent. I think somebody sent us that, didn't they? Because we did a review of it a little while, so I always have like a lot of affection for that.
Yeah.
So now it's like, I say that there's three tiers of like Stephen King adaptations, but it's like most of the ones I'm thinking of are good ones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're all, they're all agreeing with me that fucking Commando was a video game.
Pretty much,
it was.
Yeah.
It was like Duke Nukem, kind of.
Yeah.
Or it was just, you know, back in those days, a video game was a scrolling platformer that had levels. You know what I mean? And it ended with a boss fight. And that's the way that movie is set up.
Yeah.
It ends with boss fights. Starting off with, what was his name, Scully? I lied. And dropped, you know, fucking... The bosses get harder and harder as it goes. Yeah.
Yeah, apt pupils. I mean, yeah, you know what? I don't think I saw... I loved that story, but I don't think... They did make a movie adaptation of it, but I don't think I ever saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Room 1408. That's another good one with John Cusack. That was also great. I'd say Samuel L. Jackson was in that too. Yeah, yeah, that was a really good... So, like I said, all I can think of is good ones. So yeah. Now I'm trying to think of Stephen King's stories or novels that haven't been adapted, which that might be hard to think of because everyone I can think of has been adapted at some point, even if it was just like a made-for-TV movie or something. Which ones haven't been adapted but should be adapted?
Yeah.
Or... Now I'm trying to, like, think of something.
Hold on, though. I got two things I got to jump on. People brought up a couple, in the comments, brought up a couple things. It said, Terminator actually was a theoretical bad guy, because it was a robot. All right?
That's true.
And then somebody else said, well, by the time Total Recall came out, he didn't seem to care about killing people. The problem is that's more theoretical shit. Because if you pay close attention to Total Recall, he never went to Mars. It was all in his mind.
It's all in his mind.
Fucking, he was still back at Recall, and they were programming him to think that he was a secret agent on Mars. He didn't kill anybody. He had the embolism thing that they talked about.
Yeah, because they brought that up in the movie.
They told him that he would totally believe it. All right?
Yeah.
And it could be that the embolism thing was part of the program. Swallowing the red pill or whatever, swallowing that pill would have fucking made him not believe it. So now he believed it was true. So everything that Recall promised him fucking that he would have in his adventure is fulfilled in the movie. That he would be the hero and alien civilizations and that he would have an affair with a fucking the woman of his choice on a secret agent. Yeah, it was all fake. It was all part of Recall. Total Recall. Total Recall means just it's all your fucking memories. It's just you're just totally remembering that shit. It didn't really happen.
Yeah.
So he didn't kill anybody.
Did King make Dr. Sleep? Yeah, he did write that book.
Yeah.
Honestly, I liked the movie better than I liked the book. Isn't that weird? I don't usually say that. Has anybody done an adaptation of Bag of Bones? Because I really, I don't know, I have like a lot of affection for that novel. Because I remember it just being like kind of like a ghost story and I'm really into those. But, I mean, I'm sure somebody must have made an adaptation of it. Because like I said, all of his shit has been adapted. And he has that thing too where you can actually pay him a dollar and get the rights to one of his short stories. Like he has like a huge list of them. And you can make like, it's for film students. Like you're not really allowed to make any money off the movie, obviously. But you can make a film adaptation of it as long as you're not making money off it. Like I said, it's for film students. Yeah. But yeah, he has a thing, I think it's called Dollar Babies, where you can do that. And he has like a bunch of his short stories on there that you can adapt, which I thought was kind of cool. But
yes, Mr. Roboto, I assure you, he did not go to Mars. Okay. He was a lowly construction worker.
Yeah. There is a Bag of Bones movie. See? Every single fucking thing that I can think of, God damn it, everything's been adapted. I can't think of a single thing that hasn't been adapted in some format or another.
Yeah.
Even though that bitch has written 40, I wonder how many pages, how many words he's written over his entire career.
Yeah. Mr. Roboto's down there going, Tom, I think he did go to Mars. Because I got into this a little swole. Remember that? I got into this. My buddy, I call him Little Swole. He's a big Arnold. He loves that movie. We both love that movie. But he was like, no, man, he went. And fucking every fucking thing that he could pull up out of that movie that proved that he went, there's something else in there to disprove that it happened.
Yeah, I remember you guys having
that argument. No, he did not go. He was a lowly construction worker. He paid for those memories, and Recall gave him exactly what he wanted, and it stated in the beginning of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he believed it 100%. So did you, because you're seeing it. But no. He didn't go to Mars. They show the girl he ends up meeting later on in the fucking computer program when he's selecting what the girl should look like, his sexual preferences in the very beginning. They show that girl.
Yeah.
And that's who he meets later.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure the intention was to show that it was all imaginary. Yeah,
and it's my understanding, I haven't read the original Dick story that it was based on. Evidently, it's based on real ambiguous shit, and that's the way Philip Dick's fucking wrote stuff. But no, Philip Dick was about, he took a lot of drugs, he liked psychedelics, and he was about fucking with your mind.
I'm all about
it. Yeah, and Philip Dix believed in mind control and government mind control, and he was almost kind of an Alex Jones of his day. They said he was a real trip. But no, it was in your mind. It was in all this Cohagen stuff and this and that. He's actually a secret agent. His wife was a secret agent. And in the dream, he killed his wife because that weirdly wasn't his wife, which that gave him permission to have the new girlfriend on Mars, who's another secret agent and shit. No, man. No, dude. Come on. He was a construction worker who paid for that shit.
Yeah, because that was kind of the whole point of the company.
Yeah, they told him that fucking he would believe it 100%. Right. So they gave him all this deniability. No, we never did the process on you. This is, you know, no, you're not back. No, this dude offering you the pill? Fuck no, he's not. You know, he's not there, you know, or whatever. This isn't an illusion or whatever, you know, that kind of shit.
Sandra's talking about The Long Walk, that she would like to see that as a movie. I could have sworn I heard somebody was working on a movie adaptation of that, and I would also like to see an adaptation of that. That would actually be really good. I would also like to see an adaptation of the Stephen King novel that I just read for my Tomes of Terror show, which was Revival, which I think came out in 2014, and I hadn't heard of it previous to that, because like I said, the bitch writes so much that I can't like even keep up. But that book was actually really good, and I think that would make a decent movie. It gave me kind of like a Something Wicked This Way Comes kind of vibe, a little bit. So I kind of feel like that might be cool as well. Oh, speaking of which, I just saw, well, speaking of just something I remembered, I just saw another trailer for Candyman today, and that is coming to theaters in 10 days, okay. August 27th. So, and it looks really good. Okay. I hope it's going to be really good. So I kind of maybe want to go to the theater and see it.
All right.
And we'll see how it is. Like I said, it's August 27th, I think it starts. But yeah, I just saw the trailer. Because remember, we saw the trailer for it like 2 years ago, and then it kept getting pushed back. And so they have a new trailer now, and it actually looks pretty kick-ass. All
right.
But, you know. Yeah, Needful Things was good. I actually kind of want to do a review of that, too, because I think it's on Shudder or something. I saw it on somewhere the other day, and I was like, oh, yeah, man, that's a pretty decent movie. Jenny, don't say Candyman 4 more times. Yeah. Ooh, uh-oh. He's going to come out the fucking laptop screen. All right, so we're going to...
Mr. Roboto, go ahead and watch fucking Total Recall again. You'll see. He didn't go. You go on vacation with him through his fucking mind in this fucking fantasy.
It's a mind vacation.
It's a mind fuck. It didn't happen.
All right. So we're going to wrap this up now, because seriously, we have not eaten a single thing all day long, and I'm starving. I could even hear your tummy growling at a couple of points when I was talking. All right. So we will be back tomorrow evening for the Sidetracks show. Shit, man. We're going to have to drink again. Yeah. I mean, you don't have to. I'm just saying. It makes it more fun. But yeah, so...
I don't have much booze left.
Well, we can just have a little. We can have a little bit, or we can go to the store tomorrow, because I'm not going to the store today. Fuck that. I'm going to finish up what I'm doing, and then I'm going to go to sleep. That's what I'm going to do. But yeah. So, thanks everybody for dropping by, talking about Stephen King. And we will see you guys tomorrow evening at 5 p.m. Eastern for the Sidetracks show. See you guys later. Bye.